Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Introduction to the Four Thoughts by Jim Dunn. Sometimes even spiritual seekers become weary along their path. Remembering the four reminders, also called the four thoughts that turn the mind toward Dharma, can give us new energy and new commitment to continue our path. Based on This Precious Life by Khandro Rinpoche. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
I'm glad to see everyone here, and today we'll be talking about the four reminders or the four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma. We usually begin with the refuge prayer, and I will recite it three times in Tibetan English and Tibetan. So I wish I was better at chanting these things, but you have to live with what you got. Sanje Shodong Suk Ki Shok Nam La Cheng Shub Pardu Dak Ni Kyap Su Chi Dak Gi Jan Sok Ki Pe So Nam Chi Rola Penchir Sanje Drup Par Shok. Until I am enlightened, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Through the merit I create by practicing, giving, and all the other perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. Sanje Shodong Suk Ki Chok Nam La Cheng Shup Pardu Dak Ni Kyap Su Chi Dak Ji Jen Sok Chi Pape So Nam Ki Drola Penchar Sanje Grupar Shok. So, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the four reminders or the four thoughts. They're one of the very basic parts of our practice. And, you know, if you are like me and most people, you sometimes have problems getting to your cushion. Getting the motivation to practice is a challenge for some of us. So one of the ways we go about doing that is reminding ourselves of the importance of practice. And this goes way back to the days of the Buddha. The Buddha in his time phrased these a little differently. He called them the five daily reflections that get at the same thing. And also asked all of his followers at that time to recite these daily. And the original version goes, I am of nature to grow old. I have not gone beyond aging. I am of nature to become ill. I have not gone beyond illness. I am of a nature to die. I have not gone beyond death. All that is mine, dear and delightful, will change and vanish. I am the owner of my karma. I am born of my karma. I live supported by my karma. Whatever I do, good or evil, that I will inherit. And the version of that we talk about, the four reminders that turn the mind to Dharma, are the preciousness of human life, leisure, opportunity, endowments, its impermanence, the unsatisfactoriness of samsara and karma, its causes. So we'll be going over those in some detail. And I would like to suggest, if you have any questions along the way, just put them in the chat room, chat box, and I'll try to respond. And then I'm probably going to leave, I hope, a fair amount of time for dialogue. I really like to have some interaction with people, and I get tired of just hearing myself talk, and I'm sure you do too. So I hope we can break this up a little bit. So I'd like to begin with a reading of the four reminders that comes from a Tibetan text. I don't quite have the name of the text in front of me, but it was translated by Jetsun Dashen Paldron and edited by the translation group. And it comes from this book, This Precious Life, by Khandro Rinpoche, who's an excellent teacher. I've met her a couple of times. Brother, what's the word for it? First teacher, I guess, is the word for it. She's very good, very smart, knows us very well, knows all of our bad habits, and goes right after them. She has sort of this take no prisoner style, but she's a very good teacher, and I really like her and her approach. So the four reminders in this traditional phrasing of it. This human existence, with all of its freedoms and endowments, is extremely difficult to attain. It enables one to accomplish the meaning of one's being. Having attained such a precious existence, if one doesn't accomplish the benefit in this life, in this time, how could one achieve this perfect treasure in the future? The three realms are as impermanent as the autumn clouds. The births and deaths of beings are like a dance performance, flashing like lightning in the sky. The lifespan of beings races swiftly like a waterfall over a steep mountain. When the time comes for even a king to depart, neither his riches nor loved ones, relatives and friends will follow. Whatever beings abide, wherever they go, karma alone follows them like a shadow. Overpowered by existence, craving, and in ignorance, all beings, humans, gods, beings of the three lower realms, circle unwittingly in the five realms of existence, like the spinning of a potter's wheel. The three realms blaze with sufferings of old age, sickness, and there is no protector from the raging flames of death. Born unto cyclic existence, beings dwell continually in ignorance, circling like bees in a trapped jar. So that is a traditional reading of what the four reminders are and their importance. The first one, the preciousness of human life, talks about all the benefits of being born human, that this is the realm. This mentioned, the thing I just read mentioned five realms. More traditionally, we hear six realms. The lower realms, the hell realm, the hungry ghost realm, the animal realm, and the human realm. And then the realm of the titans, and then the god realm. But those two are sometimes combined. That's why this says five realms. And samsara, I think, I hope you've all had teachings on that it is basically the world we live in, birth, rebirth, getting to do it all again if we don't pay attention to what we're doing now. One of the things I'm going to talk about today that is contemplative meditation, where we learn to direct the energy of the mind by drawing it in. We hold in our mind a thought or a sentence and keep it there and use insight into understand its meaning, move from the concept towards a direct experience of reality, which is wisdom. So as we go through these, I will give us the opportunity to practice a little bit of contemplative meditation on these four reminders. And this is how you're supposed to deal with them. We sometimes talk about the three wisdoms, the wisdom of hearing the Dharma or learning it, reading about it, the wisdom of contemplating it, which I'll talk about more today, and then the wisdom of meditation, which really becomes a part of you, gets in your bones, so to speak. It's so easy, you know, to learn this stuff and recite, you know, the Four Noble Truths and think you know them. But a lot of times we really don't. And like the four reminders, impermanence, we know things change. We know things are impermanent. But in the Hindu epic, the Mahabharata, the sage Yudhishthira was asked, of life, what is the most amazing thing you've seen? And his reply was that man, seeing others die all around him, thinks he'll never die. And we all kind of have that attitude in some way, that we think that, you know, death doesn't really apply to us. You know, when I used to drive through the campus at Ohio State, I used to think I was driving through the land of the immortals, because they would often cross the street without looking, just kind of expecting to be invulnerable to whatever was coming at them, the traffic. But we all know that things happen, things change, and we'll die. So we need to really internalize that and live with a deeper understanding of impermanence. It's one of the more deeper and more profound teachings of the Buddha that I think we really need to internalize, and we tend not to. So the first contemplation, well, I do have a question from Sally. The book is This Precious Life by Khandro Rinpoche. I don't know if you can see that. I have a hard time finding my camera on this. It always seems to be the wrong way. And it should be pretty much available on Amazon, and it has a lot in it. I think it's a very worthwhile book. She's a very good teacher. So the first one is precious human life. And what they talk about then that is that we were all gifted with is they list 18 things, the endowments and qualities, and I'm not going to list them all because we have so many lists, and I've memorized them, many of them, and I've forgotten many of them, and most people don't really remember them all. Essentially, they come down to is we have sufficient intelligence to learn the Dharma. We have teachers around us that can teach us the Dharma. We have the Dharma in our world and in our country. So these are things all to be grateful for. We all have some leisure, some time where we can practice the Dharma. And if you reflect, not everyone in the world does. And not every country has the Dharma's something that can be learned. So we have all of those things. And then some of the things are we need to develop. Develop the qualities like devotion to the Dharma, to study it seriously. But we can all do that with a little bit of work and practice. But basically, those are the key things we need to look at here on being aware of and learning the Dharma. That we just really have this opportunity, this precious opportunity, and we have the capacity and the ability. And we have people that can offer us the Dharma. And we have plenty of books we can study and places we can go and practice, especially online right now. So as we think about this precious human life, one of the images they traditionally use to remind us just how rare an opportunity it is to have this life is that in the total scheme of things, they say getting a human birth is about as likely as a turtle in a large ocean who's blind, coming up once every 100 years and putting its head, when it comes up, through a ring. I guess I think of a lifesaver, one of those rings they have on boats, not candy. So if you think about that, the odds of that are pretty slim. And so that's how often you have the opportunity to be born a human. And when you consider all the life forms in the world, the millions of insects, bugs, all these other possibilities, and then if you listen to some of the Tibetans, the other realms we can be born into, then it isn't a pretty amazing thing to be here. And if you look at what we're all about, it's really amazing that we can do what we can do and we can understand this stuff. It still amazes me that I'm able to see you and talk to you on my computer from I don't know how far away you all are, but certainly not near me or here. So that's also, you know, kind of an amazing thing that we've been able to do. So there's just so many kind of amazing things about being human, and we have this opportunity. So we don't want to waste it. The second of these is impermanence. And I've already talked about that a little bit. But we all know things are impermanent, things change. We all know we're going to die. But we need to internalize that. We need to really make it real to us. We need to believe it. And so I'd like to begin with just a little bit of contemplation on that. So to do contemplation practice, you begin with just a few minutes of shamatha, your basic meditation of calming the mind, just kind of resting on the breathing. When you feel ready, bring up a certain thought or intention, and this time it'll be impermanence. I'll give a guided reading on that from Khandho Rinpoche. Use these words as this object of meditation. Just think about the impermanence of things. Try to internalize it. In order to help rouse the heartfelt experience of their meaning, think about the words. Bring ideas and images to mind that inspire the meaning. As the meaning of the words begins to penetrate, let the words drop away and rest in that. Become familiar with that meaning as it penetrates. Conclude the session, and as we come back together, keep the meaning in your heart. And when we enter the world, conduct yourself with a view of contemplation. For example, when we've been contemplating impermanence and the preciousness of human birth, your view will be one of more appreciation. So if you could all just kind of sit quietly, maybe lower your eyes, take a few deep breaths, just kind of calm your mind, begin to meditate a little bit. Begin your contemplation with the awareness that even the ground you are sitting on is subject to change. Ask yourself if you've ever seen or met any sentient beings on or above or below the earth who has not experienced death. If the answer is no, sit in meditation with the awareness that you too will experience impermanence. Even your view and understanding of all the effort you put into thinking about things, beneficial or not, distracted or awake, is impermanent. Contemplate the impermanence and death of everything inside and outside you as much as possible. Now let's begin a little bit with that, just thinking about how impermanent things are. Then think of all the time wasted in distractedness, non-awareness, hesitation and sleep, and in simply waiting for the right circumstances. Add to that the number of years that have already passed and the number of years you will spend in such states in the future. How much time do you actually have left to regard this life as a dream? Just kind of hold that in your contemplation for a few moments. Did that work for everyone? nod or use the hand or something to respond. Good, good. Well, that is basic introduction contemplation practice. We don't teach that enough, I don't think. I mean, we talk about it some, but it really is an important part in so much of meditation. When we talk about it and when people get confused about it, they think they're supposed to give up thinking and just sit there and focus entirely on their breath and not be there. The whole idea of meditation and practice is to develop this ability to contemplate with some one-pointedness, to develop some insight and depth and understanding what we're doing, to kind of begin to embody it more and more. And it's important to do this because we do spend so much time distracted, watching television, thinking about other things, thinking about how great it would be to get something new or nice, how great it would be to go to a restaurant again without having to worry about a mask or being sick. So all of these things are just kind of pulling us away from our practice. And yet if we really understood deeply the whole idea of impermanence and just how little time we have for this, we would all be a little more diligent. And that's what the four reminders are supposed to make us do, is become more diligent in our practice. Now, I've heard people working on a big project that's kind of involving them and taking up all their time. And they say something like, I wish I could be done with this so I can get back to my life. But really, that is their life, at least now. This is your life now. You may or may not have life tomorrow, but this is your life today. This is the life you actually have. As we say in the meditation, you know, forget the past. It's just a memory. Don't think about the future. It's a fantasy. Just be present now. So that's another way to contemplate this, is to be really present now, to let go of all these other things. And as we get in better touch with the whole idea of impermanence, we're actually getting better in touch with what's real, with reality. And when we stop resisting, things go a little easier for us. So many of us do so much to resist change, to hang on to things, to cling to it. And to some extent, that's important. You kind of want to maintain some of the things you own. Keep them going, maintain your car, get the oil changed, see a doctor if you're having problems. But getting too obsessed with it, trying to be forever young, is just kind of fighting a losing battle. I think we all kind of know that, but we tend to do it anyway. So these are things to kind of think about and think about with some depth. The next of the reminders is karma. And karma and samsara, the fourth, often get lumped together. They kind of are intertwined in so many ways. But karma is pretty definite. Our actions will have consequences. Our habits and our tendencies, as we do them again and again, get more and more embedded and cause our habitual tendencies, the negative habits that produce suffering. And if we work on it, we'll develop more positive habits that produce happiness. Samsara, as I talked about, is the image is usually of the cycle of things that go around and around. Birth, death, rebirth, again and again. And moving through the six realms, the hell realm, the hungry ghost realm, the animal realm, the human realm, the titan realm, the god realm. And Alcondo Rinpoche talks quite a bit about some of the hell realms that we can wind up in, really to trying to drive home the point of suffering as we're thinking about it. And the Tibetans had a rather incredible imagination on hell. I think there's something like eight of them or seven, I don't know. Again, so many lists. Somebody once quipped, Christians love Jesus and Buddhists love lists. We have lists for everything. But just for an example, the sixth hot hill is known as Heating Hill. Here we have the physical experience of being roasted alive until the sense of the body exceeds the limits of the sky, and experience of body and flames is inseparable. Then there's the intense heating hell, where the intensity of the flames is double that of the previous realm. Our body is pierced with flaming rods, and we are subjected to such extreme burning that we become inseparable from the flames. And there's go on and on. There are cold hills. So if they just have this amazing imagination about that reviving hell where you die and are tortured and sawed up and then come back and you get to do it again. Well, the lowest and hottest hell is the Vichy Hill. Sometimes they talk about if you commit some very action, bads of bad karma, like killing a llama or killing the Buddha or killing your mother or your father. So I thought that's interesting, so I'd pass that on a little bit. But and those are things to kind of study and contemplate some. And I've always been amazed by the Tibetans' imagination on just how horrid these hells are. And if you really contemplate those and really understand them, I guess that would be a very strong motivation to practice well and to avoid negative actions. But no matter how we try, samsara is always going to be unsatisfactory. You know, we can be happy for a while, and samsara certainly does have its pleasures. We all know those, at least some of them. But none of them last. You have a wonderful meal, and a few hours later, you're hungry again. You get something new. You enjoy it, delight in it. But sooner or later, it'll get, if it's like a piece of clothing, it'll get a tear or a stain or a spot. It's like a car, it'll get a dent. Or in either case, it'll go out of fashion. It won't look good anymore. It won't look like what you want. It doesn't have the image you want. So these are all things to contemplate. Contemplate them. I would really recommend looking up a list of these and developing contemplations of your own. The preciousness of human life, impermanence, karma, and the sufferings of samsara. So I want to do one more contemplation before I stop talking and kind of open it up to questions and see if you guys have any concerns or interests or anything's on your mind. So let's sit again and begin with another contemplation, this time on karma. So sit for a moment or two quietly. Relax the stubbornness of your mind. Extend your mind beyond what your senses can perceive. Appreciate the presence of millions of living beings in whatever forms they exist. There are sentient beings as big as mountains, and others so small they cannot be seen with our eyes. Each of them possesses a body and mind with hopes and fears and aspiration to sustain its existence. Each one creates karma that comes from the fruition of particular samsaric environments, and each one desires happiness and freedom from suffering. In spite of this, all of them are stuck in ignorance, unable to recognize that the ground of happiness is created from positive karma. contemplate their measurable sufferings, which is more than you can read about or understand. So take a few moments and just sit quietly and contemplate that. All the beings that don't quite understand that the positive karma is how you get happiness, how you really get skillfully what you want. Oh, I hope that worked for everyone. This is a little bit more about how we should practice developing these contemplations, going deeply into the concepts, the teachings of the Dharma, letting them penetrate us, become a part of us, inspire us to practice, to continue to practice. So we still have quite a bit of time. There's more I can go on about and talk about, but I just wanted to see if anyone has any questions or comments. So if you do, unmute yourself and speak or type something in. Deborah, are you?
I'm doing Nundro practice, so I do this every day. I contemplate these each day.
Very good.
So I've been doing it for a year, and I've made a lot of progress, so I'm pretty happy about that. But these things are not easy, and on different days, different ones seem more pressing or more urgent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our minds are pretty tricky. They seem to come up with all kinds of ways to distract us, and that brings other things to the forefront. You need to realize you need to work on one thing today, maybe impermanence, maybe a fear of death.
Well, with COVID, impermanence is on our minds all the time, it seems, you know.
Yeah.
And my mother and my husband's mother both passed last year, so we've been involved with that, so I guess it's on my mind a lot.
Yeah, no, COVID has been, I think, a great opportunity for Dharma practice because it does bring a lot of this right to the forefront. It's pretty hard to ignore and ignore the impermanence of our lives. And I think I just read that we're approaching 400,000 dead in this country.
I know, it's terrible. I'm retired public health, so it's terrible because many of those deaths could have been prevented.
Yep.
And so it's just criminal on his part. And thinking about telling our loved ones what we do or don't want at the time of death, if we are able, or leaving it in writing for people so that.
That's another thing that's important to think about, is we really become aware that we will die.
Yes.
It's really a gift to your family, your loved ones, to somehow have a living will that tells them what you want, how you want to be treated. You know, it's something we really don't want to sit down, gee, when I'm dying, I want this. Because we really don't want to sit there and think about me dying, but...
Right. No, I think it's important. And I've been, you know, struggling to figure out, in addition to a form, more instructions in terms of, if it's possible, what we would want from a Buddhist perspective as we die.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, I'm from Albany, New York. So our Lama is at KTD right now. So if it was urgent, he wouldn't even be able to get to me But, you know, if possible, I would want him to be involved. So, or some senior person at the Sangha.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking about it quite a lot, actually. And trying to figure out, I couldn't believe that somebody hasn't figured out some kind of set of instructions for folks who aren't Buddhist, you know, kind of the key things.
Yeah, I know Lama Kathy's done a little bit of that. And Kathy Jackson is part of our Sangha and one of our teachers, you probably are aware of or know. And she has dealt a lot with death as a chaplain.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I'm sure from both a Buddhist perspective and a non-Buddhist perspective.
Right. I worked in the field of HIV. Mm-hmm. So that was something in the early years, especially, that was always surrounding people who were diagnosed and their loved ones.
Yeah, and that is something that we probably should offer more teachings on. It's something that I don't feel particularly prepared to do, but about the bardos and how to behave at the time of death, and then how to instruct our loved ones to care for us or to deal with us when we're dying. But there are teachings on that, and I know Lama Kathy is aware of them.
Okay.
And I'm sure people KTD are quite aware of them and could offer them or help you with that. So that would be a good thing to think about and do. Okay, anything else?
Not for me.
Okay, any other questions? One of the things I brought up and mentioned were the six realms. I'm not sure how familiar everyone is with them. Talked a little bit about the hell realm. And the simple way of thinking of how you get there is through really fierce anger results in some variety of the hell realm, maintaining that kind of hostile attitude or doing something angry. And that is the lowest of the realms. The next realm is the hungry ghost realm, which I think is sort of the realm of America. In the hungry ghost realm, beings are often depicted with huge bellies and very thin necks. They can never be satisfied. They always want more. They're always hungry. They always need more. And that is sort of like what a lot of this country seems to be about, the advertising we see. You need more. You need this. You need that. So we need to learn to kind of let go of the needing of more. Really realize we need a little less. So that is another thing to contemplate, is the hungry ghost realm, is this kind of a greed, is I guess the klesha that really impacts that the most. The next realm is the animal realm, and that's sort of the realm of ignorance or bewilderment. In the animal realm, they seem like they're doing okay, but if you really look at animals, they're always a little bit worried about a predator or worried about catching something to eat if they are a predator. There's never this real ease of just kind of being present. Although sometimes it looks like they are, but somehow there always is that need to worry about their safety, their well-being, or kind of worried a little bit about where their next meal is coming from. And that is the world that comes from bewilderment, of not quite understanding, of developing the Dharma. The human realm, the realm we live in, is the best realm because it gives us the most opportunities to practice Dharma, to work with these thoughts. Animals aren't able to. The hungry ghosts are too busy being hungry. The hell realm, they're too busy suffering to even think about it. But, you know, we have that opportunity to practice, to become enlightened. We have the endowments, the ability to learn, to think, in the presence of teachers. The next realm, the realm of the Titans, are the ones I think of as American executives, kind of the elite. They also want more, and they're always fighting to get more. and need to dominate things. Sort of the realm of arrogance, grasping, and kind of warring with each other, and then maybe the God realms, which is the upper realms. And in the God realms, I think of that sometimes as the trust fund kids. They don't need to work. They have everything they need. They don't need to worry about much of anything. You know, and they can live blissfully. But at some point, all the karma that got them there comes to an end. And they wind up being reborn, possibly in one of the hell realms. So it's not a final realm. It sounds wonderful, being a god, being in the God realm. But ultimately, it does come to an end. So those are the ways we have of suffering in the six realms. I think that's another way to add a little depth to your contemplation on suffering and on karma. So it's karma again that gets us in all of these places. So the key thing is to practice, to maintain your vows, your refuge vows. Stick there. Any other questions, comments, arguments? Somebody asked, the fifth realm is the realm, it's often called the realm of the Titans. It's the realm where they have a lot of good stuff, they have wealth, but they're kind of always fighting to keep it or to get more of it. Because again, I think of it as the realm of executives and American corporations. Donald Trump seems to be a good example of the problems with that realm. He has a lot, and yet he's just kind of messing up with it. So I hope that helps. Anything else? We have about 10 minutes left, so. Have I been clear and convinced you all? Spend the day contemplating. At least 20 minutes contemplating some of these things every day. And it's good to develop this practice of contemplative meditation in addition to your shamatha meditation. And I hope I was correct in assuming that all of you are meditators and have a shamatha practice. So I think that's all I have to say, if no one else has anything. There's much more to be said about all of these. I think Marcus either has or will be giving a talk on some of these individually. And they all can be gone into in much more depth than I've done this morning. But I wanted to give an overview so you know what they are. You can begin to practice with them, to work with them, to think about the four reminders or four thoughts that churn the mind. And kind of internalize that into your practice, that you have this precious human life. But it won't be able to keep it. That it does depend on our behavior, our karma, our actions. And samsara, no matter what we do, is never going to be really free of suffering. So if there's nothing else, then I'll let you all go.
Thank you very much.
I hope that was of value.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.